What is up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Mind Crank Podcast. My name is Connor Bryant. I've got my associate co-host, Maxwell Brown.
Hi.
And we've got mad scientist Brian Gottlieb on the line here with us today.
Greetings, friends.
And Brian, we phoned you in for a very special reason. We've got the full spoiler of Oath of the Gatewatch in front of us. Pre-release time's coming. It's like there's new card smell in the air. I can feel it. It's coming soon.
For sure. Pretty excited. There's a lot of cards I like in this set. And just like a lot of, we're going to talk about deck possibilities, but we also want to talk about just card evaluation generally. I know, Connor, you were talking with Brian earlier today about this.
Yeah, and it's like, it's really awesome because Oath is a set that's a little bit different than Battle for Zendikar, where there's a lot more like, it seems like there's more like good cards, I hope, like instead of just like, oh, GTN's right on rate, everything else is kind of like odd. Oath, though, has a lot more cards that are just like kind of weirder and like kind of like more specific or like in specific decks, but they're also just like just seem more powerful on the surface.
Yeah, I think a lot of interesting things that we saw like a little bit of in Battle for Zendikar
really got fleshed out
and like have appealing constructed, like they have reasons why you would want to play like a mid-range Eldrazi deck, for example.
For sure. Yeah, like, and a lot of times it was like and I think this is something Brian actually said when he came on before Pro Tour, or after Pro Tour, Battle for Zendikar, is like, you build decks with the cards from Battle for Zendikar, and they felt like really, really bad block decks. Mm-hmm. And now, hopefully, those decks can actually be, like, players in Standard. And
yeah.
We'll have more, like, cross-block synergy, and things will kind of, you'll be able to actually use those, like, maybe like a Devoid Aggro deck or whatever, like,
right.
That kind of style card can now see more play, because there's more support.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny how strongly I disagree with you guys, and how strongly I disagree with everyone in the world about this set. I think it's actually, like, super limited in its applications. Like, as I go through the spoiler, I'm so much less excited than everyone else on the planet. And for one particular reason, and it's like, it's the same problem as Battle for Zendikar, is I don't think there's realistic mana bases to play with all of these. I mean, do we have like a term we're using for the colorless mana, or is it just colorless mana? Is that what we're calling it?
I guess just call it, like, I guess you call it wastes.
I think wastes is, like, the
waste mana?
Yeah, or just, like,
yeah, it's a waste of design space. That's what it is. No, I think, like, I don't think there's enough lands that you have to have a very specific focus to be able to play a lot of the most exciting cards in the set. I think a lot of the colored cards are very, very underwhelming. And I think, like, just kind of as I was looking through things, I was like, oh, this is an interesting option in the modern Tron deck, or this is an option in the modern Eldrazi deck. And that's all I said over and over. And there's a few outliers to that, but I think on the whole, the theme is you're going to have a hard time playing a lot of these cards in Standard, except in like one particular deck, which is not good for a healthy metagame, because if that one particular deck is just like, if the payoff for using these interesting cards is so huge, then it seems like it squeezes everything else out. Like, how many different ways in Standard can you build a colorless deck? I don't think there's that many.
Well, I like, is the mana really that hard? It doesn't seem like Painlands are just tap for wastes, right? Like, that's a tri-land.
Okay,
right,
so there's four lands that you can't search up.
Yeah, but like, why does your mana base have to be that way? Like, you just have so many options. Like, the colorless lands are excellent. Like, cards that you would want to play anyway.
I mean, also, like, you need to play, like, Haven of the Spirit Dragon.
Yeah.
Like, any, like, the Blighted lands, they produce wastes. I mean, I guess it's, like, it's really hard to have, like, a waste deck and then, like, Crackling Doom in the same deck.
Sure.
Yeah, I see that.
I think,
like,
there's almost no way, like, waste sees play. There's only one card.
Not the card wastes.
I think there's only one card that incentivizes actual waste, but I'm having a really hard time. And maybe it's because, like, the bulk of my evaluation of this set with a modern Pro Tour coming up was shaped by, like, the modern.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable. But, like, I think, like, Seagate Wreckage, for example, is extremely appealing. Like, I think that card's real strong.
Is that the library type thing?
Yeah, the draw card if you have no cards in hand.
Where is that strong?
The card is just very good.
I agree. I think as a card, it does a lot of interesting things. But, like, where does it fit? What kind of deck is looking for that effect. It's not a control effect, right?
No, it's a,
you don't want to have no cards in
hand. It's a dump your hand effect, but that's like a colorless Eldrazi deck like could be an aggressive deck that dumps its hand very quickly.
You could also be like a one or two color aggro deck,
especially if you
with like good mana. Even if you're not an Eldrazi deck, like this card seems.
I don't see that application at all, and maybe I'm totally wrong. I think that an aggressive, because here's the thing, is like, again, in a block, you're 100% correct. In block, this would be a great strategy, but all these colorless Eldrazi creatures still have to contend with things like Siege Rhino. And that goes back to like, we're talking about evaluation generally, right? So let's get back to that point as opposed to just this set.
Sure.
If you're looking at evaluation generally, you have to start with the context of the format. And the context of the format is extremely powerful, multicolored spells, and you get them above rate, essentially. Like, you pay 3 mana for what should be a 5 mana spell because it is so difficult to produce those 3 colors of mana. But the thing is, the mana is so good that it's not difficult to produce those colors of mana right now. So if you're playing these colorless cards, they need to be able to compete on rate against these multicolored cards. And in Modern, sure, that's totally feasible because you have cards like Eye of Ugin and you have Eldrazi Temple. But I don't see how it's feasible in Standard as of yet. And maybe someone will show me
I'm
wrong.
I just don't, like, okay, because I don't believe that you have to be, like, as dedicated colorless to play with these Eldrazi cards. Like, I just don't think that having one colorless mana on turn 5 or, like, a colorless mana on turn 3 is really that difficult in decks where, like, you want to play pain lands anyway, for example. Like if I want to play like a black white deck, like I'm gonna have a lot of colorless producing lands in my deck anyway.
I think that's true, but like to Connor's point, you're not playing Crackling Doom in this deck, right? Like, that's not realistic.
No, yeah, but I'm not even sure I want to play that card anyway. Like, do you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, Crackling Doom's a broad example, but the cards that have ultimately defined this format and did define it at the last Pro Tour, and I think it moved away a little bit from this as the metagame, you know, evolved, but that's because you're able to target specific cards, but the bulk of the initial Standard Battle for Zendikar metagame was about exploiting these super powerful undercosted spells. And I don't see how you can compete by just giving up those spells.
Well,
you're not getting as powerful things back.
But I think what happened is that, like, you know, what happened, like, obviously Siege Rhino and Mandus Rider are super obvious. And so, of course, like, the first Standard format is going to be Siege, you know what I mean? Like, and every single time it rotates, people are going to go back to, like, Siege Rhino, Mantis Rider. But every single time it happens for a shorter period of time. Do you know what I mean? Not that those decks aren't still good, but that, like, people are just, like, more adept at finding the answers that are already there. So, like, your ability to kind of find, like, oh, okay, so, like, Gideon just got printed. Like, it's clear that I don't necessarily want to play Gideon and Siege Rhino in the same deck because it's kind of a weird dis-synergy. So, like, what's a Gideon deck that's a card that competes on rate with Siege Rhino? I mean, it's probably not better, but it is at least, like comparable, right? So you just find, like, other ways to, like, compete on rate when you have to, but you can have, like, a removal suite or other types of threats that are resilient against the format. And, like, I think these Eldrazi cards have a lot of, like Matter Reshaper just seems awesome. Like, I just want to play this in decks with, you know, Silk Wrap and whatever else and just, like, play, like, these kind of mid-rangey weirdo decks. I don't see why you can't do that. And, like, I love the tools that are available.
Yeah, I think Matter Reshaper is, like, a card that is just... And that's the one that, like, is above rate.
Okay.
For sure. I see that. I think that card's like playing multiple formats almost unquestionably.
Okay, I want to you know, hit very good, you know, I want to put a Silk Wrap in off the Matter
Sure. I mean, like, just drawing a card is pretty great. I'm not upset about it.
I mean, imagine you just hitting another Matter Reshaper. that's pretty gross.
I would enjoy that greatly. No, but like I really believe that as you look at cards like Matter Reshaper, the most important thing for you to do is like, okay, so like understanding high level magic and being able to play magic at a high level is very much about utilizing shortcuts, because there's too much information to process as like, as a new player would process these cards. You need to be able to like quickly get to the essence of these cards. And it's something that we all do, you know, not to say we're the absolute elite of the magic world, but as like competitive players, it's something we do without realizing it. And I remember I was teaching a friend of mine in the game, like a really smart guy, but he had no experience with magic. And this was just like a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And I brought him to a pre-release, and I hadn't really seen the cards before. And he was watching me play, and he's like, how do you know what these cards do? You didn't even pick up that card to read it. And I'm like, honestly, I don't know. I just have like this established set of shortcuts that's enabling me to get to the essence of the card quicker. Like, I understand, oh, that card's like Sarah Angel, basically. You know, I can shortcut all these things over and over. So one of the things I found myself doing when I was first evaluating this set was I knew that there was something specific about waste mana. Like, I know that it's not colorless mana, but in some sense, my brain was still shortcutting it as colorless mana. And as soon as I stopped and I was like, wait, this is not colorless mana. It doesn't function anything like colorless mana. If you view that instead as a sixth mana symbol, and I understand that now that changes the pain lands too, the pain lands tap for the sixth color of mana, but you have to evaluate it that way. And you have to understand how much of a constraint it's putting on your mana base. It's a new color of mana, and you have to have access to it reliably. And in a format where the mana is based around mostly fetch land mana bases, there's no way to fetch for a colorless mana right now. And that's problematic. That means the entire mana base has to change. So for that to happen, moving to this new mana base has to offer you things that are more powerful than moving to than using the fetch land mana base. Mm-hmm. And as of now, I don't see that in these cards. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff, and I think there's a lot of things that can be players in multiple formats, but you know, when you're talking about card evaluation generally, you need to be able to apply these shortcuts, and you have to also be able to check your shortcuts and see where they're failing you. And I think a lot of people, their shortcut with these cards is failing them because they're seeing this card as, oh, I can get colorless mana anywhere. But it's not that simple the way mana bases are currently set up. You're playing a totally different style of mana base, and once you commit to that, you have to be getting the payoff. And I think these cards are very, very good. I don't think they're going to yet compete with things like Siege Rhino. Let's look at another card that I think is really impactful. Something like Thought Knot.
I mean, if you think it's like a question of the mana base, and that to you is like the thing that's holding you back. Like, I think the thing to look at is the lands, right?
Mm-hmm. Hold on, I actually have a really interesting land I want to talk about. Can we talk about Crumbling Vestige? So this is the land that enters the battlefield tapped. When it ETBs, you choose a mana of any color, and that mana goes in your mana pool, and then it just taps for waste the rest of the time. Is this, like, a constructive playable land? Like, can I play four of this in my mana base and have it be fine? If, like, I'm, like, a mostly sorcery speed deck.
Yeah.
It seems, like, reasonable, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's,
It very much depends on what your deck looks like, but there are... I was actually very intrigued by this card, and I was thinking about it a little bit more today. I think there's a lot of decks that would happily play this. But it's got problems. Like, I started off in Tron, and I'm like, is this better in modern Tron than Grove of the Burn Willows?
Okay.
And I don't think it is. Well, I'm actually pretty positive it's not.
That's because in Tron, right, like, you very
life
often...
doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, not just that, but you very often want to have access to red mana late on a turn besides the turn you play your red land. So, like, I mean, it happens anytime you can't make a land drop as a Tron piece on the first three turns. So, because of that, like, I think it, like, you still just want to have your land cast Pyroclasm or whatever.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't.
Really. I think, like, an interesting spot for this card is, like, so I've been, like, thinking about, like, a Devoid Aggro deck in my head. And so, like, this card's really good at, like, casting Forerunner of Slaughter on turn two, and then just tapping for wastes afterward. And like, if the early drops in your mana base, it kind of lets you cheat a little bit, because this card's fine early to like hit your colors, but then on turn four, when you don't need like black red, like when you don't need like triple red or whatever, it's a lot easier. It's not as hard. So
I'm just concerned that making these cards is so much worse than just like making good cards. Like, okay, you made Forerunner of Slaughter, and I have like, I don't know, any other two drop, which is also really good. Like,
yeah, like Hangerback Walker.
Yeah, Hangerback Walker. Exactly. I'm not sure that you're yet getting paid for jumping through all of these hoops.
Oh, I mean, I think that's fair. I think like this card's appealing because what if I? It's just like, I just think that you just want to cast like a small number of Eldrazi cards. Like if you really like look at these cards, like they mostly cause a single wastes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they basically all do except for Kozilek.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like the amount of mana you, I mean, is it really that hard to just put a Reality Smasher in your like mid-range aggro deck? Like it seems like it, like if you have, I don't know, 12 colorless sources, that's probably fine.
I mean, the real trade-off, though, is, like, I mean, let's say I want to play Reality Smasher and Obzon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, like, whatever waste source I have, unless it's, like, a Pain Lands, isn't casting my Unoffended, it's not casting my
Seed. Well, right, I understand that's, like, that. I wouldn't put it in Obzon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's, but, like, the most like color-hungry
right,
deck, right?
Yeah, but that's the mid-range aggro deck, right? So, like, right, whatever you're doing has to be better than Obzon.
Well, Reality Smasher does conveniently beat Siege Rhino in a fight and is resilient against removals. Like, I mean, I think this card is a real payoff card. I think Matter Reshaper is a real payoff card. I don't know. I'm not super hype on Thought Not Seer.
But I mean, so I thought Thought Not Seer was a really bad Tide Hollow Speller, but it's actually like a slow Vendilion Plick. That's really what this card is.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds really dumb, but that's exactly what it is.
So right.
Like, take the card, and then eventually they have to replace it.
Slow motion.
But it's actually probably better than that because they have to kill it to get the draw.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
no, I understand.
It'll be
that
sick in Modern in the Eldrazi deck where you just play it on like turn three and like take their combo piece and like keep going. Like,
this is a two drop in the Modern deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't actually cast it on turn two, though, is the problem.
Why?
Because, so, alright.
You have to cast Heartless Summoning first.
Yeah, no, I was talking about this. I was like, what's the nut draw, right? Can I turn two this guy? And if you're like, I have Udine Urborg, Heartless Summoning, then you can't even...
Wait, why are we playing Heartless Summoning? Oh, no, should we be playing good cards as opposed to garbage?
Hey, don't talk shit about... Card's $6 right now.
Well, that's a bad idea.
I just play
Eye of Ugin into Eldrazi Temple.
Oh, yeah, that also works. Yeah, never
mind. Yeah, that's the deck. I mean, that's what... Get rid of your Heartless Summonings. I don't know if you've been telling people to have Heartless Summoning in this deck. Start with getting rid of that, and then get back to just playing like the broken 2-mana producing lands that are in Modern.
That's pretty busted, yeah.
And then, you know, you can, if you want, you can play like Endless One on turn one as a 2/2, while your Eye of Ugin isn't doing anything.
That old
game?
That old hobby horse. I played a free 2/2. I mean, Frogmite doesn't...
Or play four of them, yeah. Draw four of them.
All of them. But do you think that Reality Smasher is like a legitimate 5-drop in Standard, Brian?
I honestly don't think any of these cards are going to make a huge impact in Standard because of the mana base issue. Okay. I think.
I mean, is that just for this Standard format?
Yeah, obviously.
Okay.
Obviously, because you have all these ultra powerful multicolor cards, and when those rotate, I mean, obviously we don't know what's coming next, but I have a feeling that then this stuff will have, you know, it's the block deck problem. So this will be the bigger supported block when there's the next rotation.
Yes.
And I can see this being the strategy that you definitely want to play. Now, maybe we should talk about the cards individually. I think as a whole, there's a lot of issues with... Everyone is, like, in magical Christmas land right now, and they need to, like, pump the brakes a little bit because there's a lot of hoops to jump through.
Okay, so you're here to like quash the fun.
That's your chosen
role. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about the individual cards. All right.
So let's hold on. I want to do like just like a brief discussion on like card evaluation just in general, right? So like we've talked about kind of like the drawbacks of playing a card. It's like how do you get this card to work? Like what do you have to do?
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about like Brian used a word that maybe some people don't know, which is rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Matter Reshaper, like the king of rate. Like, let's just toss this guy, right?
Okay.
So, I'm just going to read Matter Reshaper for the people who haven't read this card. So, it's Tuna Wastes for a 3/2. When Matter Reshaper dies, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a permanent that costs 3 or less, put it into play. Otherwise, draw that card. All right, so we are paying two and a waste, so let's assume we can make waste mana, right? Let's just talk to the card on its own.
Let's assume we can make the six color of mana.
Right, right.
I'm telling you, you have to look at it that way. Okay. Otherwise, if you look at this colorless mana, your opinions get warped. Because
all right, Matter Reshaper costs two and a purple.
Right, right. Two and a purple.
I think that's the right way to look at it. I really do.
All right, so it costs two and a purple. 3/2 for three mana.
Mm-hmm.
That's like perfect. That's on rate, right? Like, well, I pay three mana, but I get a
little
below
for constructed. But
well, sure. For constructed, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like close though. It's like
not
embarrassing.
But it okay. So it's low for constructed, except for the fact that the power is still the right power for construct. So like basically, it's meaning it as a threat against control decks, it must be answered. So. Like three power is at the point where like your opponent just can't let it sit and play, yeah. And that's actually really important for constructed. Like a 2/3 would be like significantly worse.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So we have a 3/2.
Yeah.
So like close, right? It's like, and then when it dies, it replaces itself, right? So
you're well, it does something. It's
well, right. So like yeah. At the very least, we're getting a card out of it.
Yeah.
So it's like if it's a land, we're getting the card. Like we're getting a card. Mm-hmm. So it seems replacing itself if it dies. So
yes.
If it gets still crafts, like boohoo, those kind of things will come up.
Yes.
It could also be Obzon Charm.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so that's like pretty close.
Yeah, that's right.
A
3/2
that when it dies replaces itself.
So that's
close.
Yeah, I mean,
but
you're looking
at. The thing that's replacing itself is can just have this huge upside. So it can be like draw a card, add 3 mana to your mana pool to like cast this other thing.
Yeah.
Or like just draw a card or like put a land into play. Like, all these things are more than what you usually get for 3 mana.
Mm-hmm.
This card is very, like... And this is like kind of like the shortcuts thing that Brian was talking about. This card's very, like, Sprouting Thrynax-esque. You know
I think this card reminds me most of Kitchen Finks.
Yeah.
It's a 3/2, and when it dies, you get something else. Mm-hmm. And Kitchen Finks is, like... Obviously, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
But...
It's very well-defined. You're getting
two-one
oof.
But you're definitely, like, if you build your deck correctly, like, you're going to get paid off on having this card.
Right.
You know, like, I have no... I mean, Brian has concerns about the mana base, and I think that that's, like, valid. I have no concerns that this is a powerful effect. Anything
right.
that puts a permanent from your library into play is a powerful effect.
Yeah, I mean, we're not, like, it's not as open-ended as, like, oh, real top card, it's Emrakul. Here's
yeah.
Emrakul. Like, you can't do that
sure.
kind of stuff. But like this card is very, very powerful. Just in that line of text doesn't come up very often.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and when you're evaluating cards, like, I mean, we're talking about evaluating cards a little bit. Is that this is like a shortcut in your head? Is like something that sets off alarm bells in my head is a card that either tutors for a card and puts it into play, or puts it directly from your library into play. Or anything that puts something directly from your graveyard into play that's, like, under 5 mana.
Right.
And cards that do that just tend to have a high rate of constructed play. So that's just, like, if you're looking for, like, quick shortcuts, like, you know, look for a tinker. You know what I mean? That's, like,
right.
that's like the golden rule of card evaluation is, like, if a card reads, like, wow, this could do some really busted stuff, and it's, you know, a 3 mana card, that's something to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, like, to do some more quashing, I think you need to your 3 mana or less permanents, including Matter Reshaper itself, need to matter.
Right.
And there is a deck where they may not matter. I'm thinking about looking at Siege Rhinos and Gideons across from me and not being super thrilled with Matter Reshaper off the top of my deck. I think against control, it's like, it's hard to say backbreaking for a 3 mana card, but this is a card that beats up on control without question. I think versus like fast aggro decks, it's a great like blocker. I think versus the kind of like bigger mid-range decks like
Obzon. Against a fast aggro deck, imagine just hitting a land after
yeah.
trading.
No, I think it's great in those situations. Like I don't mean like okay, I think versus control and versus fast aggro, it's a great card. And I think it has some weaknesses against things like Obzon. And I don't know, like, just trying to stay with the basic pillars of the format. It's pretty mediocre against Jeskai. Like, they have a ton of ways to kill it.
I mean, if you're hitting Silk Wraps, it's pretty nice. If you're hitting Wasteland Strangler, it's pretty nice. Like, I mean, you could have, like, I mean, you could have your answers to Jace be permanents. You could, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of, like it doesn't just have to be creatures.
Yeah, but they're willing to play without like permanents on the board a lot of the time. I don't know. I'd have to see it in action. I think it's like slam dunks versus a couple strategy, and then okay. I'm a little soft on it against like the mid range decks. But I think that's how cards like this usually are, right? Like, you don't want to draw your kitchen finks. Well, I mean, I don't know.
It depends how. So like, it's interesting because, I mean, a mid-range deck, when you're thinking of Kitchen Finks, you're thinking of Modern, that context. A mid-range deck in Modern has a ton more removal spells than in Standard. So it's a little different. And that's like a similar thing, is that this card's awesome if your opponent it intends to play a removal spell on its opponent's creature. You know what I mean? But actually, like, Abzan doesn't necessarily do that. It tends to outclass its opponent's three
like,
drops.
Yeah.
The only, a Modern deck that reminds me that almost, like, functions like a Standard deck is kind of, like, the Wilted Abzan deck from, like, Protar Favorite Forge. That's
right.
That's if Abzan aggro in Standard was a Modern deck, that's what it'd be.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a good analogy.
It's, like, hard to draw a lot of comparisons because, like, that style of deck just doesn't exist a lot in Modern. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're much more, like, mono-black devotion-y kind of style, like, decks.
Yeah, because a deck like Standard Absent would just get housed by the fringe decks. Like, not the fringe deck, but decks like Burn and Affinity. And those don't really exist like they do, you know, in Standard.
Yeah,
those
really have in Standard. And if they do, they're much less, like, innately powerful. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, the mono-red deck right now is very good, but...
Yeah. Alright, so... And do you have any other comments on Matter Reshaper, Brian, or on card evaluation generally when you're from an individual card perspective?
I mean, I just think that I've it's long been a thing where like people have just looked for the best in cards, and I understand that's a useful activity. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but this set in particular, I think people have gone way overboard as far as seeing the best case scenario for a lot of these cards. And they're interesting. They will unquestionably impact Modern in a very, very strong way.
Okay.
But I think people need to pump the brakes a little bit on some of them.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, it's interesting that you think the Modern impact... do you think this was intentional? Like, do you think that having this be the Modern Pro Tour... is, like, they printed a bunch of cards that were, like, have this situation where they're kind of almost better in Modern.
I don't think
they that's, like, unusual, right? I mean, it's unusual for a card to be better in Modern than Standard.
Sure. But, yeah. I think that's opinions, like, I wish that'd be something if that happened. And they're like, we made cards for Modern that aren't busted in Standard. We're awesome. Like,
they do it all the time.
I mean, they do it all the time. Yeah. But, like, I think that doesn't really happen because... Originally, like, Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch wasn't supposed to be Modern. It was supposed to be Standard. Remember,
So everyone
was really mad, and they're like, Rebel.
Yeah. Okay, so and this so, is like, just the happy accident?
Yeah. But
At least they'll get a chance to showcase the Oath cards. Like, that's, like,
yeah,
a
they must be
thing.
So excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They lined up that way.
Right, because remember, like, the last Modern Pro Tour was Pro Tour Fate Reforged, and they're like... Yeah. Maybe Udin will see play. That was really it. They're like,
yeah.
I think this will be the last Modern Pro Tour, too. I'd be very surprised if it wasn't.
Really?
So, I think so, yeah.
Dude, I think that
Modern
become, like,
yeah,
the most
Modern is about
format.
To become the most popular format.
It's like
it's
not
just so bad, though. Like, you have to be a little
you just don't love it.
You just don't love it?
Yeah. It's actually not bad. It's actually so fun. But
so, Brian, this is,
there's
it's
just
like,
tremendous problems and like,
Brian,
it's a high-level like, format.
It's just like football. It's just really messed up, but no one cares.
Yeah, probably.
It's the same idea, right? Like,
it's like old Legacy.
Oh, well, whatever. It'll be fine once they ban Summerbloom and Tron.
And Tron.
That'll help.
It's printed all these cards for Tron. They're not banning Tron.
Well, they're going to need to because they just printed all these cards for
They're running to ban, like, Eldrazi Temple or something dumb. I know it. Like,
I think they will. I'd be very surprised if Eldrazi Temple doesn't end up banned eventually.
Oh, my God.
Is that
Iron That is a hot take. That is a hot take.
Ivugin's just better, dude. Like...
What if they just ban Ivugin's better because it's in both decks? So ban that and make Tron worse.
I don't think they want to ban out Tron, though. I think they like having Tron in the format.
Big dumb
Tron's
stuff.
Cancer. All right.
Not wrong. But okay. So another card I want to talk about is Reality Smasher. We've kind of talked about this a little bit. So this guy is 4 in a purple for 5/5 Trample Hastes.
Mm-hmm.
I discharge great and limited. I like the vanilla test a lot. Like, I'm in. All right, and then whenever he becomes the target of a spell controlled by your opponent, that spell is countered unless they discard a card. So if they're like Hero's Downfall, this guy, they have to discard a card to get it to go
through. And they're DQ'd for playing Hero's Downfall.
Well, sure.
Win-win.
They ruin his path at all.
It's extra insane.
DQs
your opponent.
That card's very good.
I had the Great Aurora DQ an opponent in a tournament.
That did happen. It was awesome.
he revealed something he couldn't have?
No.
It was, like, way weird.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah.
Like, super weird.
Super convoluted story.
The Great Aurora was already great, and then it did that. It got better. But, so, Reality Smasher, I kind of like this card because the way I, like, frame Standard is, like, if I'm paying 5 mana for something in Standard, it is a guaranteed 2-for-1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Windmate Rock, like, Omnixilis, like, all these cards that, for 5 mana, I know I'm getting, like, a hell of a magic card.
Yeah.
And I think that Reality Smasher is, like, pretty close on this. I think he fits.
It's good against Planeswalkers.
For sure. And he's just good. He's just a 5-5 on for 5 mana. That just, if they want to kill it, they have to 2-for-1 themselves. I mean, it's a little bit awkward right now because there's a lot of cards that kind of, like, bypass his...
Yeah, there's Crackling Doom and
Stasis Snare.
You know where there's none of those things is in Modern, where this card is going to be forced out with Eldrazi Temple.
Yep, I'm booked.
Like, this card is so good in Modern, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's
the clock that these decks are going to present is going to be very real, and it's going to also have disruption. Like, I think you start base mono black. I think you have Thoughtseize. I think you probably have Thought Knotseer on turn 2, and then like Reality Smasher on turn 3, and I don't know. There's some scary openers for this deck.
I'm in. No more Scrabbling Claws. We got real magic cards, boys.
Yeah.
No more Scrabbling Claws.
People are playing that card.
I know.
I think people like Wasteland Strangler is just like real bad.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not personally too afraid, but I think it's just because I'm playing a style of deck that tends to be good against ground aggro decks, but...
Yeah, I mean, the problem, though, is, like, this ground aggro deck, like, finishes with, like, an Ulamog or, like, a Kozilek.
No, I don't think it goes that big anymore.
You don't think it goes that big anymore? Okay.
I don't think it has to. I think probably the Reality Smasher is, like, its top end.
Do you think it plays, like, Oblivion Sower or no?
No, I don't see any reason to. Just, like, a real deck now. Like, you have Warping Whale. Like, that card is really, really good in the format.
The card is very good.
Mm-hmm.
The Eldrazi Charm, as someone said.
The Eldrazi Charm, exactly.
So you're like having this like lower to the ground. Well, it's as low to the ground as this deck can be. Okay. Do we have any like lock elements? Are we like a Mishra's like, are we like a shop style deck or what are we?
Like, I think there's two versions. I think there's a deck that looks something like that, and there's a version which I'm pretty sure will prove to be the better version, which is like, it's just a disruptive aggro deck. It looks like...
Would you play, like, Thorn of Amethyst in a deck like this?
You'd certainly sideboard it.
Is this, like, a weird, like, Murfolk-y deck?
No, well, you know what deck it is? It's... And this is, like, an obscure deck that if I didn't already, like, alienate everyone who listens to your podcast, I certainly will now.
All right, I'm ready.
But you say me, Hooks, I'm so in.
No, it's the It's, I guess there, it was like a precursor to Channel Fireball. They weren't even Channel Fireball at that point. From Pro Tour Amsterdam, their Doran deck, which was for the old extended format. And I probably only know because like I was at that Pro Tour. And otherwise, it would just be totally forgotten to history. But it was basically like this extended format was kind of warped by the existence of Grove of the Burn Willows.
Okay.
So what they did was...
And Punishing Fire. That was
the and Punishing Fire. Yeah, they were both available at the time. And so was Jace, for that matter. It was a good thing that format didn't get fleshed out because there's so many broken things. I mean, like we had a deck that made Iona on turn one, but
right.
Beyond that, their deck was they played no creatures which died to Punishing Fire.
Yes, this is the Treefolk Harbinger deck.
Yep,
oh, I remember this deck. Okay, yeah.
It was like Treehouse. They called it.
Yeah.
So it was just this like hyper aggressive deck with a ton. Well, hyper aggressive is the wrong word, but it certainly had like turn 4 kills with a ton of disruption built into it, and resiliency against the removal spells of the format. And we're looking at now 4/4s and 5/5s that are totally like disregarding lightning bolts.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't affected by Colligan's Command, which is another big removal spell. I mean, I would say lightning bolt is the defining card.
Is it insane to me that Okay, so a minute to like 10 minutes ago, I was like, I'm scared that Tron might be the best deck in Standard, but it sounds like this deck would destroy Tron.
I think so, yeah.
Because Tron can't remove any of the creatures, right?
They can't all dust. Yeah. They can't Ugin. They can't Oblivion Stone.
Yeah.
If I recall, if
they barely. I'd
have all these Eldrazi shuffling up on repeat right now until I had the best version of this deck, and then I would actually play Ad Nauseam because Ad Nauseam is going to be really good at this turn.
You're a savage. That's like,
I don't. How do you kill fast enough? I just like you. Just have 8 good creatures. Is that it?
In this deck,
what are other good ones? So in the Eldrazi deck,
you have Endless One. Which, when your lands top for 2 mana, you're talking about a 2 mana 4/4.
Mm-hmm.
At worst, 3 mana 4/4.
Okay.
At worst.
Okay.
I mean, just the interaction between Urborg and Eye of Ugin is really powerful, right?
I'm not sure how many Eye of Ugin you're supposed to play.
You don't just play 4? I mean, if you're talking about a deck
just
playing
like 4
5
Urborg, 4 Eye of Ugin?
Yeah, I would just like snap off.
That's what a lot of people have been doing, and that seems like, man, you're asking for such bad hands with a mana base like that.
Sure, but you're playing
I mean, the problem is, like, so if you don't have Eldrazi Temple, then, like, you just have a 5 mana 5 5 in Modern. I mean, I guess you have, like, Thoughtseize and stuff if you're not, like, if you don't have, like, the ramp draw. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think you do need 4 Ugin for. You need 4 Urborg. Ugin for Temple. I'm not 100% on 4 Urborg.
Yeah, maybe it's like 2-3 Urborg.
Okay.
But like, I really don't want to play Expedition Map either.
No, I don't think you have to.
Can we play like Black Green for like Ancient Stirrings to like set this up?
Maybe.
You get Oath of Nissa.
Shut up.
But then you can. Okay, if you Oath of Nissa, you can just cast Liliana off of your colorless mana, right?
Yeah, I guess. Alright, broke it, but... Ancient Stirrings, you can go to the new Drowning Sorrow.
Yes. Drowning Sorrow is pretty
That's real good, right?
Like, yeah. Wow, I didn't even think about that. That's, like, pretty tight that you can get the Drowning Sorrow off of...
Also, like, if you play red, you can go to the Pyroclasm.
Mm-hmm.
But the Drowning Sorrow is real good. But, alright, Brian, I have a quick question. Can you sell me on Thought Not Seer? Tell me why this card is good. Because when I first read it, I was like, man. But now I'm like, okay, this card seems very good.
It's okay in Standard, but I hate... This is what has been really frustrating me about this, because the thing I come back to is, like, this is, like, a strong, good card in Standard if you can pay the purple mana, which no one can right now, and if you are, now you have a 4-mana 4/4 against Siege Rhinos, so you're probably already lost anyway. It doesn't really matter what Thought Not Seer gets. But... when it costs 3 or it costs 2, this card's insane. A four four on turn 2 that took your opponent's removal spell. Like, good luck. I don't know how you're beating that.
Yeah, that's definitely strong.
Or took your opponent's combo piece after you Thoughtseize them on turn 1. I guess you can't Thoughtseize on turn 1 and play this on turn 2. So there's the first chink in the armor. But I think it's just like... You know, it does a lot of the good things that Vendilion Click does. It's nowhere near as good, but in the right context, which is the context of all my lands tap for 2 mana, or maybe 3 mana. I guess Eye of Ugin taps for 3 mana if you draw...
If you have it plus, Urborg.
Does it come into play tapped?
Nope, no. Untapped.
Oh, so you can play this on turn 2 and Thoughtseize on turn 1. Turn 1 Urborg, turn 2 Eye of Ugin.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this idea is just broken. These openers are insane, right? Can you think of a stronger opener than that?
I mean, Thoughtseize into Thought Not Seer on turn 2 is pretty insane.
My Vintage deck can, the Shop stacks to beat this. But...
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that...
I hope they went first.
I guess that is, like, the dream, but that's, you know, that's 4 cards. I don't know. I guess just, like... Isn't Affinity capable of equally scary draws? You know what I mean? Like we are talking about a format where like decks do stuff like this and aren't, you know, like, right? Doesn't a deck that's legal in the format just have a win on turn 2 with their best?
Oh, for sure. Unquestionably, but what we're talking about is a deck that also has disruption while presenting these kind of clocks, which is a whole different like it's back to the Amsterdam deck. It's not the same as here's the fastest clock available. It's I just took your two best cards and here's a pretty strong clock on top of it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but the strength of the of this like a four, once it's in play, right? This card is good at two mana, but it pretty quickly falls off in modern after that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and would you play three mana for this in modern? Like,
I think so.
Meaning if your land's only tapped for one.
I would, yeah.
Yeah.
If I didn't make the mana.
Okay, all right. And then would you pay four mana for it in modern? Meaning, like, if you consider...
It's not playable at four mana.
Okay, so like, what I'm saying is that, like, this card at its best is super undercosted, right? At its, like, normally you'll probably have, in an average draw, access to one, like, two mana land, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the average case, like, okay, good enough for modern, but not, like, insane compared to, like, a Liliana or another card that you could play for three mana in modern. And then, like, the bad case, which is when you don't have two mana land, he's, like, worse than what you normally get for a modern. So that, to me, seems, like, pretty fair for a card that averages turn three. So, like, if this card averages coming out on turn three, then it's a modern playable, but it doesn't seem like it's that... Do you get what I'm saying? Like the upside means that there's also a downside risk. So, like, when you evaluate the average case of this card, it appears to be just, like, same rate as, like, a Liliana or a Kitchen Finks or any other good, like, three-mana modern card.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to find its way to the ban list, but my point is that it's a modern player, for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. What I mean is, like, I don't think it's fair to evaluate the, like, say that, oh, this is, like, a disruptive start. But it's just, like, Thoughtseize already existed. They didn't just print Thoughtseize. So it's, like, you could play, like, decks that are, like, Thoughtseize into Tidehollow Sculler. And obviously, this card's way better than Tidehollow Sculler. But that's a disruptive clock, right? But it's not as fast. And it's also not really a good deck in modern.
And it dies to Lightning Bolt.
The
thing, though, is, like...
I mean, I think the removal speed will change. I think we'll see a lot more Go for the Throats. But...
I mean, imagine playing, like, a Tidehollow Sculler card that's, like...
But Go for the Throat can't kill any of these cards, correct?
Yes, it can.
No, yes, it can. Go for the Throat destroys targeted non-artifacts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, these guys aren't artifacts. Which is actually...
I was confusing with Ultimate Price, my bad.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Ultimate Price is terrible.
you don't unpack Ultimate Price. That would be a bad idea.
I like, Thought-Not Seer is just so big. He's just so huge. Like,
4/4 is big. That is what qualifies. Yeah, for, that is the size that means big and modern.
Right. Like, does not die to Lightning Bolt. And the giant scrolls, everything is like.
Yeah, I mean,
he's like one smaller than a Tomber Guard.
I mean, my understanding of it is like, look, we're going to see a change in the power of Lightning Bolt. I mean, if that's what it comes down to, that's what it's gonna be, is that people's removal spells will be tend away from red towards black, right? You know, decks will be more incentivized to be like Grixis as opposed to Jeskai.
Right.
Or not even Grixis as opposed to Jeskai, but like
Sultai?
Yeah, maybe, or maybe like Esper, is like,
right.
You play like an Esper style controlling deck. Like, I don't know exactly what's gonna happen, but obviously Lightning Bolt is worse with this guy running around.
And what's nice about this guy too, like this style of deck too, is if it's like a big mana strategy, or like a quote big mana strategy,
mm-hmm.
It's like, I mean, I'm not even sure if you can qualify that as that, but like, you also just play Cavernous Souls and you just put it on Eldrazi and matchups, mm-hmm. where the counter ability isn't relevant. It actually casts this guy because you just tap it for a wastes.
Yeah.
And then when your opponent has a remand up, you're like, all right, tap this for.
So so Cavernous Souls taps for colorless.
Right.
And taps for
a mana of any color.
A mana of any color, so that you can use to pay for the colorless part of an Eldrazi.
Right, but not the waste part.
But not the waste.
Right.
Part.
So if you have all black sources,
mm-hmm.
in a cavern, your guy is not uncounterable. But if you have another waste source, he is.
Then he is. Okay.
Which is like super annoying, but.
Well, I assume this an Eldrazi deck, even one with Thoughtseize, is going to have a decent number of straight colorless lands.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have Eldrazi Temple.
Yeah.
Actually, Ivory doesn't tap for colorless, so you may have an issue in this deck with the Wastes, so it's a pretty... Cavern of Souls seems like a pretty blue, like good blue card in this style strategy.
Yeah,
it doesn't
sure,
cast
yeah.
Thoughtseize, but it's just like, you assume you have enough black sources to...
Yeah, yeah,
I think you probably have to cap at 12 non-black sources, and everything else has to make black.
Yeah, which, so like, you have like the 4 Temple, the 3 to 4 Eye, and like 2 Cavern. Seems like a very reasonable mana
yeah.
base. But I've been cited by Ancient Stirrings in this deck. I think that's like a good place to like go to. Like, I think that, like...
I mean, the black is sort of, like, free almost because you really want to play Urborg to
Urborg
enable
plus
that start.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Ancient Stirrings, though, like, finds your threats. It smooths things out. It can find removal spells. It can find Warping Veil. Which, like,
yeah.
if the matchup and if the card's been in that matchup, it's like, just great.
That's an interesting
You can find,
one.
Like, I think that this deck might, like, main deck maybe, like, I don't know, maybe Spellstite's not aggressive enough. But, like, you're definitely going to play it in your 75 and you find Spellstite. Like,
mm-hmm.
That card just seems really, really good in the strategy.
Yeah, Spellskite's an interesting one. It's a nice one to hit off of a Matter Reshaper.
Yes.
For sure. I mean, I like that... Oh God, that card... Would you even play that? I guess you still would, right?
Matter Reshaper?
Yeah.
Modern?
Yeah.
I don't know. It only hits...
No.
Brian, what do you think? Do you think you
play
Matter Reshaper?
I'm pretty sure you play that card.
Because your average case is 3 mana on turn 2, right?
Yeah.
So you want to have 3 drops...
Yeah.
Because if your deck is all Thought Knot Seer and Reality Searcher, it's just terrible if you don't hit. So it's like you can't play too many cards like that.
Yeah.
Because you'll just get hands that are like swamp, Reality Smasher, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you probably can't play Endless One at that point, which might be a problem. It depends how good the black Eldrazi group to be. Like there's the Sacrifice guy who seems like fine to me.
Okay, that's interesting. But 2/1 for 2 that you can kick and make some sacrifice creature.
Yeah.
Bearer of Silence is the name of that card. He's
okay.
Interesting.
I
don't
like
this
card is like an aggro card.
This card doesn't seem super great in Modern. Seems a little slow.
Yeah,
but...
I think I agree with that. But you might have to fill a few slots.
I mean, what if we play like? Can we play Liliana in this deck? Like, imagine like Matter Reshaper into Liliana. Ugh.
The first version that I ever saw of this was one that Matt Ferrando showed me, and this was pre this set. He played basically mono black Eldrazi at like an SCG open. Pretty sure he did horribly, but like his deck was not optimally built. And it was a much bigger version with Oblivion Sowers and Liliana's. And he had Bob, which might be. You're kind of toeing a line there.
That's a little bit aggressive, but okay.
Yeah. But I mean, there probably is a bigger version.
Well, Bob is an attractive option if your deck tops out at Reality Smasher.
Yeah.
If it stops at 5, I think it's plausible, but it's still a little much. Like, I don't know if that's something I would sign up for in this deck.
Might be a possible sideboard card.
Yeah, and you kind of, like, are getting the 2-for-1 effect in other places now with Thought Knot Seer and Reality Smasher and Matter Reshaper. Like, that's the other... piece of the puzzle. Like, so we started talking and we talked Disruption and Fast Clock. Now let's talk about the fact that like every card is a 2-for-1 in the deck and you're starting to approach Jund territory, right? Like that's Jund's
yeah.
is everything's a 2-for-1.
Like these cards aren't bad. Like they're
yeah.
but they're good cards.
Yeah, yeah, they're good in play. You're not just cheating them out. Yeah, yeah, I understand that for sure.
Alright, I'm in. Should be a list.
It's definitely where I would start. If I was qualified for this Pro Tour, I don't know that it'll prove to be the best deck, but it's doing things that are unfair in comparison to other decks, and that's saying a lot for Modern, right? I mean, I'm also assuming there's going to be a banning of Amulet, otherwise,
yeah.
you should almost certainly just play Amulet.
Do you think? Okay, well, fair. Are we maybe just living in the world where either Amulet or Summer Bloom is banned?
Yeah,
and also,
I think
and also
so.
Probably
yeah.
Goryeo's Vengeance.
I think it's a pretty reasonable assumption. But,
yeah, I don't know if we'll see Goryeo's, and like they want to unban something too, just because that's how they operate.
Sword of the Meek, yeah.
Sword of the Meek.
I think that's plausible.
That's our
pick. That's the only card along with Tree of Tales, which I think would be safe to unban.
That's just like, I don't disagree with you, but they're just not. I don't think they're going to do it.
They'll
never do that. But that's it would not be overpowered.
We had an episode where we did ever like. We reviewed every bank card's case.
Yeah.
Knowing those two are, like, feasible.
Yeah.
People are saying Stoneforge Mystic, I don't buy it.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. It's so insane.
I don't think I buy that either. I mean, like, I've heard people say ban Batterskull, unban Stoneforge Mystic.
That's such a dumb idea. Batterskull is a playable card that's interesting.
Yeah.
And, like, a fun kind... Like, without Stoneforge Mystic, Batterskull is a super fun, interesting card that's playable in Modern. It's worse right now because of how much Colgan's Command there is.
Yeah.
But it's, I like, you know, Batterskull is a great addition to the format.
But, okay, so, Brian, we talked about the Sildrazi deck. Before we wrap up, though, I want to get your opinion on a few other big hits from Oath of the Gatewatch.
Sure.
So, talk me into, or talk me out of... Chandra Flamecaller instead. He's out.
I don't even have anything to say about that card. It's just like six mana doesn't do that much. I don't know. Are people really excited about this card?
I love this card.
Do you think in a world without Seedrana, this card is going to be like...
No.
Really?
There's no world. It's just, it's still six mana, and like the zero is as pretty as it looks. It's ultimately like draw a card.
It can be more in like the actual like gameplay point where it's like I have two lands in hand and then I drew three spells. You know what I mean? Like,
but it's a six mana. Like, you really have two lands in hand when you played your six mana Planeswalker? Like, you fucking lost anyway.
I mean, think about this, like how standard games actually go. I mean, like, if you're playing the right decks, like there are definitely occasions where this. Do you know, like, if in the right kind of matchup? And I know it's a red card, so it's hard to envision it in that context, but this card, I mean, it just reminds me a lot of Elspeth. It also just kills, the plus one just kills your opponent insanely fast.
What about this card in, like, an Eldrazi ramp deck with, like...
Yeah, that's its own. But I mean, this if it does exist... The problem is the ramp isn't very good, but, like...
Yeah, the ramp right now kind of sucks, but, like, imagine, like, you, like, Nissa's Pilgrimage, and you just have extra forest in your hand.
Well, if you have the waste, you have the rampant growth, right? That card's really interesting.
Yeah, that card's tough, because it's, like...
That's a
lot of waste, but it does, you do get rampant growth.
I don't think I'd buy that one.
Especially, like, I'm going to put all these wastes in my deck so I can rampant growth to cast my double red spell. It's like,
it's also just disappointing.
Well, not the double
like,
red spell, but...
This card, when you're behind on board against, like...
A Seedrino?
Seedrino is the first one to come to mind, but, like, Seedrino plus Gideon, like, I guess you could attack the Gideon, assuming...
I mean, I guess
it's
you
still
like.
Still gonna survive though.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I think this card is just poo sticks.
All right. He's well on Chandra Flamecaller.
All right.
Sell me on Goblin Dark Dwellers. That's my next one. The Snapcaster Goblin.
Yeah, this is a pretty easy sell. I think it's just like nets you mana.
It's like Pulverine Elf, right? It's just a little.
Yeah, bit, four body, which is difficult to block, is like a big deal. You know. How many good 3-mana spells are there to bring back with this? Like, let's start with the obvious Colligan's Command, where you're looping your Goblin Dark Dwellers.
It's probably going off.
Yeah, and then there's, like, Crackling Doom. This card's 100% a player. And, like, this making a large impact in the format is way more plausible to me than the waste cards.
No, that's reasonable.
Format.
Okay. Because
it's just, like, you see how this slots into things like Jeskai and Mardu just immediately with no legwork. This is just an awesome card in the format. So
yeah, it's like it's very much so like the new paradigm of like 5-mana 2-for-1. That's like great. Like
yeah.
This is it. This fits like it weighs in all the right numbers and does all the things you want to do.
And if we start finding ways to blink it, I mean, it really gets out of control.
What about that white guy? Eldrazi Displacer.
I can't believe how much that guy costs right now. People are, again, in Magical Christmas Land.
That's my favorite card in the set.
Yeah, it's like, if it's doing what it's supposed to do, it's great, but it's just like the softest card ever. The
threat of it doing what it's supposed to do is very good. Like that, the thing about cards like that is that like you don't actually have to spend that mana on that ability.
Yeah,
you just have to threaten it.
Yeah.
It's a very, like, Max Brownie card, isn't it? It's just, like...
Yeah, why can't I just...
Onboard combat trick, just, like, Max is in.
Yeah, it blinks stuff.
I think it's a fun card, but, like, I don't know. It's... last I looked, it was, like, really expensive, and I was surprised that it was...
It's, like, $6.
For a rare, that's really high these days.
No, no, absolutely.
Yeah, especially when it's sale with, like, a bunch of Expeditions and stuff.
Yeah.
But, let me see. There was another one. Oh, Oath of Nissa. Where are you on the green ponder, as people call it?
I don't really know yet. I'm kind of, like, fancy about this card, actually. Like, obviously, it requires you to build your deck in such a way that you can't play it in a spell heavy deck.
Correct.
Right.
You need to tilt a little bit towards this. And like, I mean, I thought about it as, would I play four of this? Like, the hype it's getting is like, would I play four of this in Obzon right now? And the answer is almost certainly no.
Correct.
I don't think I'd play any of these in Obzon.
Yeah, I did not like this card in Obzon. I don't think that is the home for it.
So what is the home for it, then?
What I came up with, and I think you might like this answer, is Green Devotion in Modern.
Yeah, I like it there.
I think also, I don't think the deck's very good, but if there was like a good elf deck, it started to be good at it, just find you more Shaman of the, whatever that card's called.
Okay.
Shaman of the Pack. Yeah, it's like...
Maybe it's in a deck with Nissa.
Oath of Nissa is just odd because it's like a cantrip that... Instead of, like, most cantrips reward you for, like, having different parts and pieces in your deck, this one, like, rewards you for, like, homogenizing your deck. Assuming most planeswalkers are kind of, like, creature-y in how they act, like Gideon. It's, like, kind of just... You just have a deck of all the same stuff.
Right, yeah, yeah. The type... Exactly. Then this is, like, the tension of this card is that... Like, you have to just play so many, like, if you count itself, because it doesn't hit itself, so that means that, like, you just have to play a lot of other cards that it hits, probably, like, in, like, at least, like, 45, probably, right? Like,
I think, so I was listening to the Chapin podcast,
mm-hmm.
and he said 39 was the number.
39?
And that's,
okay.
like, that's one where you get, like, you're pretty much, like, pretty guaranteed to get, like, 1 in 3.
Uh-huh.
So 39 hits. So you've like
that even seems low to me.
I mean, I'm not.
Okay. Yeah, well, at that point, it's not selection.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
It's
like,
just can't. It's like just finding a card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm pretty low on this card. I think it's like, if it's good, it'll be good in some kind of combo-y thing that like exploits enchantments. But the fact that it can't find itself makes me really doubt that's the case.
Yeah, I keep feeling that it didn't find enchantments, and I just remind myself it doesn't.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I would sell on this card. I'm not really.
I actually like the White Oath more.
That card's interesting. I mean, like, the obvious combo it points to is playing it with Gideon, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not the name. Yeah. I cannot try that.
Yeah, Wizards makes it really obvious. They're like, Oath of Gideon and Gideon are great together. Yeah.
It's a little underpowered. It's a little underpowered on its own. Like, you need to, number one, want tokens. Number two, have planeswalkers that are an integral part of your strategy. Thankfully, whenever there's a good tokens deck, planeswalkers tend to be an integral part of it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, like, it's pretty good with... I mean, it's good with Gideon, obviously, but it's pretty good with Sorin,
yeah. And then I started thinking about Planeswalkers, which, like, have a very difficult time generating loyalty, where, like, the additional loyalty was actually worth more in that case.
Yeah.
I didn't really...
Like Planeswalkers that you don't naturally want to plus.
Or, like, their main ability is a zero ability, which is, like...
Okay.
Which is Gideon...
So this guy's like sweet with like Sarkin the Mad.
Yeah, he was the first one that popped in my head. That's actually not very good at all. But.
Well, what about guys that can just ultimate right away? It's just like Garrick Wildspeaker.
That one's kind of sick.
I mean, you got a 4 mana overrun now. Congrats, you saved mana.
But
it's good with the 2/1 ones.
My other card I want to talk about is actual Nissa though. Nissa, Voice of Zendikar.
This card is shaped by the fact that there's no 1 mana elf in the format.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, as any 3 mana green card is, right? Like, it's always...
If there was an elf in the format, this would probably be, like, an ultra-powerful card. But
mm-hmm.
playing this just for free, or just, like, on curve, is not exciting to me as of now.
Reasonable.
The plus one's pretty poopy.
Well, I don't hate the plus one, actually. I don't like the... My problem with the card is that I don't like the minus two. Because it seems like it'll be real hard to get to the ultimate, right? By that time,
if you ever minus two, yeah.
Right. Well, not only if you ever minus two, but the payoff for minus two just doesn't even seem that good. It, like, if you have to be blocking with your plants,
yeah.
Right.
What are you getting from the minus two?
Yeah, exactly. What is the minus two doing? So
I agree with that.
I don't know.
I think like a deck where this might see play is maybe like. A Hardened Scales aggro-y deck, just as you can like play it, make a dude, and then like play another creature minus. But like that's not particularly good.
Yeah, it has to be a green deck though. I don't know. This is again like, and you said it like there. Obviously, there's no 1 mana elf, Even like a Boreal Druid or whatever. And that was the card that I was hoping they would print, which would be
that card,
like
they might have had that card and they're like, this might be too good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I agree. Like, do you know what I mean? They might have.
There's been a bunch of cards where I think that if there was an elf in the format, it would look totally different. And that goes back to the last set as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Somewhere interesting with Nissa though is it like, let's say you play like a token style deck, like a Secure the Way style deck,
mm-hmm.
and you play like maybe Oath of Nissa or whatever, like Obzon colors, and you just like have Siege Rhino that's just, it's awesome, and you're just like Gideons, and you can just like have a bunch of ways to be able to like Secure the Way's untap Anthem.
With, okay.
Like, with Nissa, with Sorin, with Gideon, like maybe like you play like the White Retreat if you're not specifically black.
I guess you can. One nice thing about the white Gideon is that it make or sorry the white Anthem is that it's actually pretty good with Nissa. So like, what if you
the
were just what if you
Gideon?
Were actually just like, yeah, like Abzan color like token planeswalkers. No, the White Oath.
Oh yeah, the White Oath. Yes.
Yeah. So it's like you're just Abzan color like planeswalker deck with like Sorin, Nissa, Oath of Nissa, and Oath of Gideon.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just making a ton of tokens, making a ton of planeswalkers. I mean, obviously, like, a deck like that has weaknesses.
I think the idea is interesting, but I still don't see myself having any real interest in Oath of Nissa. I think just kind of
yeah.
Kind of
well,
power,
it helps
man.
You. It just helps you cast.
I mean, the
card
yeah,
spells because they're.
But your Abzan not as good. Like, you can cast all those spells. I think.
Yeah, the card I actually like in this deck a lot is to play Abzan Charm, and that card's great. You know what I mean? Like, that's
okay.
What I really like. Obzon Charm just so good, like, and this
yeah,
deck,
you don't
want to
pass that up
drops.
Just to get Oath of Nissa, right?
Right, like, you want to hit your land drops and stuff,
mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
Obzon Charm seems fantastic in this deck.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's not hard for Obzon Charm to be fantastic, but if there's a deck that wants it, it's definitely this one.
That's interesting.
I mean, do you remember the deck that Sam Black played at the Pro Tour? And it was, like, the Bant token-style deck. He had, like, 4 Elvish Visionary, 4 Nissa Vastwoods here.
Yeah.
Just to, like, kind of help him hit his land drops. And then, like, the deck, like, a Secure the Waste style deck always wants that. Like,
mm-hmm.
whenever you see Secure the Waste, it's often, it's like Knight of the Road Prayer, or I'm sorry, Knight of the White Orchids, like, whatever to help you hit your land drops. So I think you want cards like that.
I love Knight of the White Orchids so much. I want to play that in every deck.
Yeah, you do. But it's definitely true. Trying to think another card I want Brian's opinion on.
I can give opinions on cards that I'm excited about.
All right.
Yeah, let's. I want to hear what's something you like.
I think Kozilek is amazing. I think for as excited as people usually get about overcosted things, this card's like the truth for sure. I think it's great in Tron. I think there's a world where like it's good in Oath and Vintage.
Okay. Yep.
Being able to counter spells is like just having that text. I understand you don't get to draw the cards, but channel isn't banned, right? You just play channel in the deck, and I suppose you could probably get there.
You can just turn one, I don't know, Emerald Channel Kozilek.
Sounds good to me. I don't know how you lose that game.
Then you probably don't. I mean, they could just force a Willier Kozilek.
No, they're not going to have it. But you draw 7 cards.
I mean, you do
force
right. You
results, right? Oh, no, they can force a will with the draw.
Yeah,
trigger.
They can force a will with the trigger on the stack.
They're bad though. They don't want to do that.
They're terrible.
You don't even
draw 7. You just draw back up to 7.
Up to 7. Yeah. No. I think this card is sweet though. That clause, the discard a card with converted mana X. It's going to protect itself very well from things like Path to Exile in the Tron deck.
Yep.
Even if it somehow dies, you just drew almost certainly 5 new cards in the Tron deck, and 10 is so much less than 15. It's not even funny.
I think what's interesting about this card, obviously, like, the modern Tron applications, there's lots of ways to cheat into play when you talk about the bigger formats. I wonder if in Standard, like, there'll be, like, a sub-game of, like, which removal spells do I cast, because I know my opponent's Kozilek is on the way. And I'm trying to dodge, like, oh, how many, like, 4 drops are in my opponent's, well, you know what I mean? Like,
right, should I cast my Utter End first or my Murderer's Cut?
Yeah.
Which one will resolve? That's interesting. You have to, like, look through the graveyard and be like, how many vegetations have you cast?
Yeah.
Like, I know you have 2 more left in your deck. Are they in your hand? Like,
yeah.
The one thing I, like, this card's very powerful, but from a play pattern point, like, starts to be so annoying because it's like you can't concede when it happens. If you have double spells, like they probably have you covered.
Right.
You still have to like pay your three mana and cast your stupid cards on your counter.
I don't think ultimately like casting the last couple cards in your hand and then finding out you're dead is that bad. Like, it's
no,
not
I
like
know,
that takes
like,
long or anything.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not like Revelation where it's like Spence's Rev, like you knew you're dead like 10 turns ago, but they haven't played Nathalene yet.
Yeah, this guy at least comes attached to a 12-12.
He loses a 12-12?
Yeah, he should wrap it up pretty quickly.
Yeah. But, the game's not lasting that much longer if they have you covered.
That's fair. So what else do you like? What else are you excited about, Brian?
Linvala is like the second coming of Broodmate Dragon in some decks. Like, where this card is a good finisher, it's going to be a great finisher.
Really? That card?
Dude, yeah.
I was telling you I liked this card. I knew it.
Yeah, this card's good. It's just like, it's not going to be ubiquitous in the format, but I think like there's going to be a control deck that uses it as its finisher.
Why?
Okay, I'm in.
Just because it makes two guys? It's just
It's Thrag Tusk, dog.
Two guys is a big deal. And the five life is not irrelevant either. I mean, that's a huge amount of life for these decks.
This guy. All right, I'm... All right.
Do we ramp into this guy? We're just like, turn four Veggies.
Yeah, that's not worth a lot. I mean, it's like fine, but...
I guess there's like more broken stuff, but...
Sphinx is the final word. Like, there's whole formats that would be totally defined by that card. This is not yet one of them, but like, I can think back many times where if this was in the format, the entire format is warped around it.
Oh, yeah, this is...
It's like very,
this
like,
is the Aetherlane-y
kind of
stuff
card.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it'll see play. I haven't heard a lot of people talk about it, but it's just, like, good at what it does.
Mm-hmm. I'm in.
Yeah, and I think it's just, like, the type of card that's for a specific matchup.
Yep.
And in that matchup, it's incredible.
Matchup or metagame, but yeah.
Yeah. Even if it's in a particular metagame, it's for some decks in that meta. You know what I mean? It's not, like...
Yeah, yeah. The Black Mythics are both horrible.
Okay.
I don't know why anyone would want to play them.
Wait, what's the other one? It's Toledus and...
The 6-6 that exiles your library.
Oh, yeah, that card's awful. Okay. How
the
do you
art
feel...
on that card is awesome.
Which one? Toledus or...
No, Inverter of Truth.
Yeah, it does look gas. It's a really good card.
Speaking of mythics, Kozilek's Return, I think people are like very excited about that card in Tron. This is, oddly enough, the one card I'm not excited about in Tron. I don't think this matters in Tron whatsoever, and I think like you probably, where you want this effect, you still want Pyroclasm over this card.
That's reasonable.
So people need to pump the brakes on that guy.
I mean, I think it's good in Standard, this card.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, I don't actually know what two damage kills.
Yeah, just like small red creatures, but then the red decks aren't like that right now, I guess. I like this card in like Jund sideboards. That's where I'm in. Kills X champion. Mm. I literally say that every time, but kills X champion. I don't know. Like,
that's fine. That's fine.
Kills through Apostle's Blessing. It's an instant speed removal spell, which is like pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like Volcanic Fallout's been playable in Modern.
Yeah, I don't think it's like unplayable. I think again, when I looked at it, it was a little too expensive for what it does. I'm pretty sure.
That's fair.
As things often are. At the pre-release stage, but still worth mentioning, I think.
You know, like, Aili, Eternal Pilgrim?
The black white you drop?
That seems like a commander card to me. About that guy.
That's low. That's real low. I think the card's not good either, but still.
It's just phrased in a way where I believe it's for commander, so I refuse to acknowledge it as a card.
Okay.
How do you feel about Reflector Mage? The two... The, like, Man of War meddling mage thing.
It seems okay. It'll see play.
It seems great and limited.
Oh, so, yeah.
If you can cast it, this card's real good.
Yeah.
How about the, do you like the blue-red Flying Haste Prowess guy?
Yeah, it's, I actually do like that card. I think that might see some play in Modern.
Okay.
In the blue-red deck. The other interesting guy is the Jury and Ruin Diver. There's a lot of ways the blue-red... Modern Delver deck gets paid by that guy, but three mana for a 2/3, like three mana in that deck is like a fucking billion. Like, that's so much mana.
Yep.
So even when you're getting paid that much, I actually don't think that guy's going to make the cut. but I could see Storm Chaser Mage.
He could, I mean, but he has, like, he has upside. That card has upside that it's, like, insane, right? Where you're just, like,
Snapcast.
You, like, cast him and then Gitaxian and Probe on your, on turn three. Then on turn four, you, like, pass the turn and then cast, you know what I mean? Like, in a Snapcaster or something.
Yeah, it's just too expensive. I think this would have been a really interesting card at just blue-red. And I don't think it would have been broken. Like, I think it would have been...
At a 2-2 or at 2-3? Like, I just don't think they'll print
blue-red. It probably needs to go 2-2 for standard purposes. In modern, it's interesting at a 2-3.
Okay.
For 2 mana. But in standard, it probably needed to be a 2-2. If you're going to cost it that way.
So, you really seemed high on Warped Whale. The Eldrazi Charm thing. Can you talk about why you're so into that card?
Well, it just offers a lot of options to these decks, which are, you know, sometimes struggling to find a colored source, like things like Tron. I mean, granted, they have a fairly good amount of red sources, but this is a very diverse set of answers for cards that they sometimes find problematic, such as Sowing Salt, kills either Deceiver Exarch or Pestermite, which I'm almost certainly that's why it's worded that way. Like, doesn't it just seem like too perfect of a wording that they weren't thinking about its interaction with the Splinter Twin creatures when they made it?
Well, I mean, maybe, but I think that's actually, I think one of the reasons is because if it didn't, they wanted it to kill Jace and 2/1 aggro creatures. So, like...
Yeah, maybe.
So, I mean, it could go that way, right? It could be interpreted that way,
too. But it kills 2/1 aggro creatures with its third mode, right?
If they're attacking, yes. But that's clearly, like, worse, right? Like, you can't...
Yeah, no, it's worse. It's worse. But, like, this kills a lot of important things in Modern. It kills Bob, Jace, both sides of the Splinter Twin equation...
Birds of Paradise.
Birds of Paradise, sure.
Spellskite, I guess. Then
yeah, it kills Spellskite.
Viscera Seer, Spellskite.
And it exiles, which is interesting.
Yep. Yeah, I think this is like just a solid card that does some interesting stuff. And then being able to ramp is obviously... It's not your first choice, but when you use that mode, it's probably game-breaking. So...
Well, yeah, I mean, or it's like... It's almost like... At the very least, that's like almost like the bare minimum cycling kind of mechanic. Like,
kind load. Of.
It's like it doesn't.
I think cycle. You're not going to use it. I think in more cases than not, you're going to hold it.
Sure.
Presented with that choice, but until it's like 100% correct that you're getting paid a huge amount for having that one additional mana.
Right. Like if you've like multiple and you're hit and missing your land drops, like I can see you cashing one of these in and not really worrying about it.
Well, what about in standard? The ramp mode seems a lot more appealing when it's. Your own, like, you have a card that's a removal spell that you can reasonably play in, like, an Eldrazi ramp deck that also, you can just play it on your end step of your opponent's turn 2 and then cast Explosive Vegetation on turn 3.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me. I mean, you kind of gave up a card for nothing, but...
Sort of, except for the fact that Explosive Vegetation recaps the card. Like, I mean, you put such a high premium on... I mean, if you're casting Ulamogs, then the premium on casting your spell one turn earlier is huge, right? So, yeah. I mean, you're definitely willing to give up cards for, like, I think that deck, especially since it doesn't always do that, right? It's like, you could also just play it as a removal spell and just slow down the game a turn, so you have the option, but if your opponent doesn't do anything, then, like, that's pretty attractive. Like, imagine you're playing against an aggro deck, right? Or, like, even a deck like Abzan, and you're keeping up the, I don't know, Warping Whale or something, maybe kill their Hangerback Walker, and then they just play a tap land. Like, they have a slow start, and so now you can just not let that mana go to waste and, like, on your turn two, and then play your ramp spell a turn early.
I mean, if that's, like, the worst-case scenario...
For right, yeah, I was just like, saying, is like, if that's the downside Jason's risk, yeah.
Counters, like, transgress the mines, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very, very diverse card for the decks that can play it comfortably. For the decks that have access to purple mana, so.
Yeah, for the purple decks.
Yeah, the purple decks love this card.
I mean, are there any other colored cards you want to talk about? Like you said, you were kind of down on the the colored cards generally.
Yeah, that's really about it as far as colored cards that I see.
Any lands?
What do you think about the man lands?
Yeah, man lands.
The blue-red one is probably the best of the bunch, I think.
Okay.
Do you think, Abzan decks will be at, like, the ones that are already at four, Shambling Vent, do you think they're going to five or six?
Well,
with Hissing Quagmire?
What it does let you do is play, like, 27 lands in those decks.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben Rubin played 29 and got second energy.
Yeah, I don't think he wanted to do that. I don't think that was ideal.
I don't think that was intentional either, honestly.
It was not.
Okay. That's so insane.
Accidental.
What a master.
But no, I mean, that's a really great point. I was telling people for a long time that I wanted to play Jeskai Black with, like, 28 lands, and I just couldn't find... I wanted man lands to slot, but when you give me Wandering Fumarole, like, I'll almost certainly play Jeskai Black with four man lands and 28 lands, because it was just... I'll be honest, I haven't stayed exactly up to date with the format. Like, I know what's going on, but I haven't been as into it. But there was a point where all I cared about was just hitting my land drops. Like, that was the most important aspect of the format, was never missing a land drop. But you also couldn't afford to flood. So, like, I started mitigating that by playing the black-white man lands in my Jeskai Black decks. And I was having a lot of success with it. So if the format stays in a place where tempo and hitting your land drops is just the utmost important, most important thing, I think the Abzan deck could very easily adapt a 28 land model with 8 man lands.
With all 8. See, I was thinking, like, you'd play 4 vents and then maybe, like, 5 or, like, as 5 or 6, you'd play Quagmire.
Sure,
like,
and that's certainly
like,
possible.
Because, like, in Modern Jund, you have access to 8 man lands, but you don't, like, necessarily play all 8. You know what I mean?
I think that's more about tapped lands in a format as fast as Modern.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a consideration in Standard, too.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
well, that's my point, right? Like, I'm saying if it's the case that you can afford, which for a long time in Standard, these games were so long, and the only point of aggro was, like, the Abzan Red deck, which also disappeared off the face of the planet following the Pro Tour. So, like, all you wanted to do was just be able to play mid-range games and never miss a land drop. So if it goes back to that, having 8 man lands is insane.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's, like, not many Mantis Riders, and, like, there's not a lot of cards that, like, punish you for stumbling, like, just playing extra tap lands, like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was a while ago, so.
Maybe in, like, an Abzan-y, like, control deck for, like, Languish, this is, like, you just snap off, like, 28 lands, 8 man lands. Quagmire seems especially good in that deck, because it's
right.
Just, like,
yeah,
because
it's just, like, the
spell.
Guaranteed trade. Yeah, that's the thing, is that this one, I think the Quagmire lends itself more to controlling decks than to
aggressive
decks. So yeah, like,
that's a kind of control deck, though, that doesn't mind giving up a land, which is fairly rare for a control deck to be comfortable making that trade.
I mean, I think the Abzan decks are the ones like that. They're not revolution
right,
decks.
Yeah, I mean, black-green, like, rock-style decks are that kind of deck, right? Like,
oh, I can see that. It makes sense to me.
I mean, maybe with Demp Protector, that's, like, one of the cards that, like, wants you to have a ton of mana in play. Just so you can, like, flip it, like, morph it, flip it, cast something.
Yeah, I mean, but I feel like manlands are already late game cards to a certain extent, right? Like you're already putting a card, a manland in your deck for situations where you have 4 mana plus. I mean, and if most of your deck can be cast off 4 mana or 5 mana, like maybe you top out at like Obnixilis or Wingmate Rock or whatever, like, that I don't think that like trading this away is really bad. I mean, you're a deck that competes on board cards, right? That's
and this
your...
card is so good against the Abzan removal suite. They can't Abzan charm it. They really don't want to Dromortis command it.
Yeah.
Like, there's just not... They don't have a really good way besides, like, a murderous cut to, like, kill it at instant speed.
Yeah.
So, like, when you go to block, like, you're trading. Like, you might take some damage from a Siege Rhino or, like, a big Warden in the first tree or whatever.
Yeah, it's
but...
pretty bulletproof based on those removal spells. Like, it's pretty nice.
No, that's a good point.
So I like the Quagmire. Needle Spires is just like if a deck like
such
this
a dreamer.
Is,
it's a dreamer. This card inspires the types of decks I do not like, but that's
yeah,
okay.
Just like 24 land aggro, like weirdness.
Yeah,
this looks like it'll never be good to me.
I don't think there's nothing wrong with the card. It's just like the deck that wants this card is just not very good.
Yeah.
I mean, what about, like, in, do you play a couple of these in Jeskai just because it's so free?
Well, tap lands are not free.
Well, okay.
Especially once
in
you...
In Jeskai, they're especially not free.
I think it's the same argument. Like, if the format is such where you just need it to never miss a land drop.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when people are cutting Mantis Rider from their Jeskai, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You then maybe this card is a card they want. Like, just because that deck really is trying to play so much of its games on an empty board both sides. When, like,
right.
Once you cut Mantis Rider, like, you're expecting to, like, have answered every single one of your opponent's spells with the spell during several minutes.
I'm having such a hard time, though, thinking of when you would ever activate this and, like, feel good about it, even in Jeskai.
Well, I mean, that's...
Kind of Planeswalker, I guess? So, like, I mean, that's what's kind of nice about it is Jeskai... Generically, it's a hard time to win Planeswalker.
If the best Planeswalker is Gideon, this doesn't. Then, you what do you pay four mana to trade every turn to eat their 2/2? Yeah,
unless you can like impulse it, then clear their Gideon. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It does trade with like Anofenza and stuff, but it gets blown up by every combat trick. So,
and every removal spell.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, Needle Spires is
not as sold on that one.
That's fair.
Mirror Pool? Can interest you in a Mirror Pool? This one I like a lot, too.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing with this, but, like, it's interesting.
Copying Sorcery is pretty sweet. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing with it either, but this card, like, is a mythic and reads strong to me, so...
Can I interest you in the Devoid, like, lands, Corrupted Crossroads?
Nope.
That's pretty sweet. Nope.
I don't want anything to do with that.
You're off it.
This is not a good card.
It taps for wastes. And it's colored mana.
But the Devoid creatures are worse on rate than the multicolored creatures. Again, that's the same.
Right.
Like, in a different format? Yeah, I'm all about Corrupted Crossroads. That's fine. As soon as those multicolored creatures are gone, then you can probably sell me on this card. But
it'd be really good in block.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be great. It'd probably be format defining, I think.
I mean, it's definitely tough because you definitely, like, you print Siege Rhino, but then you don't get to unprint it. You know what I mean? Like, they can't just make the colorless cards better than Siege Rhino.
Yeah. Well, rotation's only one set away now.
Yeah, I mean, like,
that's really exciting.
Yeah, that is nice. No more Crackling Dooms, no more Mantis Riders.
It's crazy to think how it, like, just pulls the rug out from everyone's feet. Like, if your evaluations, let's just say, like, okay, Brian Gottlieb's evaluations are 100% correct, okay, and let's say just like these cards don't really see much play, maybe there's like a ramp deck or whatever, then it's just gonna be like mayhem when like cons rotates, you know, like it's just gonna
it's
be
just,
insane,
like,
right?
When they print shadows, they're gonna print 180 cards. And there's going to be 600 new playable cards.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably what's going to actually happen.
I don't know about you guys, but, like, I'm having a very hard time mentally distinguishing what cards are still going to be available from dragons.
Okay, so no fetch lands.
Yeah.
No
like,
fetch lands.
I know the
no
big overarching tenets. My point is that I've trained myself so long to distinguish cards by block. And I never made the distinction between Dragon's cards and Khan's cards. They're
like
always in the same...
Reforged? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they're always in the same block to me. So now that those cards are sticking around, I am going to have to take some time and, like...
Well, this
yeah.
is, like, the... I mean, this only happens once, right? From
like
here
yeah.
on out, from
yeah,
here
yeah.
on out, these are two-set blocks. But,
yeah.
like...
It is an odd thing. It's definitely weird. They're, like... There'll be Mega Morph cards, but no cards with Morph.
Yeah.
That's just really, it's just like, well, what's Morph? That's just very odd. Like,
it's whatever came before Megamorph.
Right,
we don't really know.
So strange. It's a really strange thing. I mean, I understand why they did it, and it's like,
yeah.
I think it was the correct way to approach it.
Play Collect a Company Eldrazi deck when this happens.
Yes.
With Matter Reshaper.
Yep. Yeah. And
Maybe.
The white guy.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Max Maybe. Is in.
Wow. That sounds. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of sweet ideas, which I think are choked out by the efficiency of the multicolored creatures. So.
Yeah, Siege Rhino still too good.
Nothing changes.
Yep.
Everything stays the same.
It will, I mean, I'm hoping that, I guess, just Gideon is the new Siege Rhino after Siege Rhino rotates, is that...
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, Gideon's, like,
Gideon's a way more vulnerable card. It's a way more card to build your deck to be good against.
Yeah, Gideon's a tough card because it's just like, it's so good in the play and so not good in the draw. Like, it's so much harder on the draw.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely worse on the draw for sure.
But
in a way that Rhino isn't.
Yeah, Rhino, yeah. Rhino literally does not care.
It's just like,
yeah, it's so dramatic with
just
Gideon. Move. I actually can't remember a card which is like as polarizing based on play or draw as Gideon in quite some time.
Yep. Yeah. It's like true. Goblin Guide. That's the one that it compares to.
Rabblemaster is a lot from the draw.
Rabblemaster, yeah. I mean, yeah, usually they're red cards. That's really interesting, right?
Yeah, they're like cards that like want to attack that first turn.
Mm-hmm.
But
Gideon's kind of that.
Yeah, when he wants to attack and not be attacked.
So yeah, yeah, because Gideon's really interesting because the structure of the format is that the jump between three power or three casting cost cards and four casting cost cards in power level is enormous in standard right now. So because he's one of the higher powered fours, him facing off against threes is like a joke, right? The only one he's really vulnerable to is Mantis Rider.
Right.
And then him going up against the other fours in the format is like way more like on par because of how great the fours are. It's like, and so you have this weird thing where, like, normally, like, a turn one thing or, like, an earlier in the game phenomenon, which is where it matters a lot on the player draw, is happening, like, so late in the game.
Right. Because of how different
the step up in power.
Right. Usually that step up is just between, like, one drops and two drops. But in standard now, that step up is between threes and fours.
Yeah. Which is... Because the ones, twos, and threes are all, like...
Pretty similar.
Yeah, they all just kind of are, like, three threes, basically, right? Yeah. And it's weird or smaller, except for Anofensa. That's the other one, like...
That card also is kind of like a Moo card.
Yeah, Moo.
Anofensa's the card is so gross.
Yeah, man. Modern playable for sure.
Yeah, it is sick in Modern.
It's gross. Anofensa's gross in Modern. That's like...
Yeah, it's really good in Modern.
Like, we've, like, Max and I both play in the Obzon-Malira combo, like, sideboard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, it's so good.
Dude,
it's just like a randomly a hate bear. It's also just like a 4/4 when they're bringing all these anger of the gods and like
it's
so huge. And
when your opponent is playing Living End and you turn to Anofensa on the play against them, wow, feels good.
I like its interaction versus Affinity.
Yep.
I feel like everyone just misses it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've not had that one come up, but definitely probably. You also just be the Anofensa theme deck. You have two Anofensa Kindred Spirit.
Right.
And one
you have the whole. Host. You get to play the whole Anofensa family.
Right.
That's good.
The alternate timelines of Anofensa. that's really what we're here for. The flavor.
No. Yeah. I mean. God, I do like one thing I have to say, and this is, God, the Eldrazi's look awesome. Like, I think like the flavor. I like love the flavor of the Eldrazi's. Like, super. And I hate to nerd out, but. Some of them, especially the Kozilek ones, like the Kozilek Bloodline guys, are awesome looking, like so cool.
I was actually thinking a little bit about flavor today. Like, this is what I do while I'm at work, is I just like mind drift across pop culture and thinking about like trends and completely worthless things. But you can tell I'm super interested in the work I'm doing. So. but I was thinking about like how much the flavor and mechanics of Magic have resonated. And I was thinking of this because I was watching speedruns and I was watching Secret of Mana. And that got me thinking like, oh, which came first, this game or Magic? And the game did, but only by 1 year. Like Secret of Mana, a Super Nintendo game, predated Magic's existence by 1 year.
Okay.
And think about how much video games have changed in the time frame from Secret of Mana to what we are currently playing.
Yep.
And then you think about Magic, which is like actually like pretty static. I mean, like obviously there's some jumps and some leaps and kind of this six color thing is a little out there, but like still safe and still within the confines of the initial rules for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still working within the same framework. It's really, like, kind of amazing, actually.
It is pretty sweet, especially the way that, like, how there's been so much design space in this game and how fleshed out it's gotten, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And wow. Video games have just become, like, so insane. Imagine telling, like, your 10-year-old self to play. I mean, I was in 10 when Super Nintendo came out. I was like barely born, but like when you're just like, yo, check this stuff out.
Yeah, I don't think you were born.
No, I wasn't. I was like, I was born in 1994, but there's, I was not out.
You were born when Magic came out?
Yes, yeah. When was Alpha released? Do you know what, like, month?
Yeah, it was released at Gen Con, right?
Yeah, so which that's is during the summer, right?
I was born in May. So okay. I was like a month old when like Magic, like Alpha Pats were being crowned.
Oh, well, I think that was, it was 93 it came out.
Oh, it came out in 93?
Oh, maybe you're right. Yeah, maybe
that. I think it came out summer of 93 is when it was like premiered.
Oh, yeah, no, not even close.
I think I look at 94 as the start time because that's when I started playing.
Okay. Yeah, it was like not widely available, I think, until the end of 1993.
That sounds like it might be right. And even though there's a computer literally sitting in front of my face right now, I'm too late.
Yeah, no one's looking it up. I'm not looking it up on my side either. No,
yeah.
Can I just say that the art for Inverter of Truth is the truth? This card looks so cool.
The Eldrazi do cool. I like how they're like, they're not like self named. They're like named by like people who just saw them like messing stuff up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like Reality Smasher doesn't know his name's Reality Smasher. But he smashes some reality. That's
yeah,
kind of cool.
They don't like. Yeah, they don't even like exist on.
What do you think the most common surname is amongst Reality Smashers?
I think they use they and them. I think is what they prefer.
That's their pronouns. You don't, yeah. Ask you what their last name are.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. What are you thinking?
Well, I know the most common first name is Todd.
Todd.
Yeah, that's just like in the lore if you look it up.
Oh, okay. All right, I see.
I'm not sure what the last name is, though. We'll have to call creative on that.
Okay. Yeah. I really like Thought Dots here. I like the puns that go. I like the pun that's in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I thought so. Well, I thought not. I mean,
he
I like
sees
that.
Your thought knots.
I like that, but.
Right, I hate that, but. Along those lines.
You hate that?
Yeah.
Have
you guys had the pleasure of playing against someone who has put a Void Winnower into play and then told you can't even?
I have not.
Oh.
Because I would literally knock someone out if they said that to me. Like, I would accept the ban and never play Magic again. Because that's, like, the exact type of, like, nerdy, internet-y, like... I think this is super funny and it's just going to be awkward for everyone around me as I tell this joke, like, type thing.
Yeah, right. That's the type of thing you hear, like, when people are registering their steel pool.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the guy saw it on Reddit and thought it was super clever and was like, oh, I have to tell everyone
That's sealed pool talk. We're trying, you know, God, that's my most hated time in any Magic tournament is sitting there registering a steel pool.
Any capable Magic player hates the sealed pool registration more than anything else.
It's so.
Although, on an interesting note, do you want to know who I've often observed taking part in.
Sky has three Doomlights. He's definitely going 9-0.
Who I've often seen taking part in that sealed pool style discussion is my brother. He tends to enjoy those conversations quite a bit. I don't know. I haven't been able to talk him out of those yet. I don't know.
He revels
in the registration.
He loves registration. It's like his favorite part of the day.
He should find someone else to complain to.
Yeah.
He's just like...
Alright.
But, alright, Brian. Before we start...
Oh, wait, we're supposed to ask you about the new Star Wars. Did you see it?
Oh, I did see it. I went and saw my first movie. I actually saw it. I was up in Albany over the holidays, and I went on Christmas Eve morning at like 9 a.m. to go see it, and the theater was almost empty, so that was awesome. And I was pleased with it. Like, it was, it certainly has like flaws, and it's like you can't really compare it against the originals, because if you're doing that, you're asking to be disappointed. But on the whole, I was pleased with it and like excited to see what happens next. Are we doing spoilers? I'm going to spoil something if anyone doesn't want to hear it.
I don't care.
All right, yeah. That's fine. It's warning.
Have you guys seen it?
No, Matt's ruined it for me on the first day.
Oh, okay.
I was like, yo, do you want to go see Star Wars? And he's like, why? Han Solo died. And then I just haven't paid money to go see it.
So who do you think is, I forget her name now, Rey's father?
Han Solo.
No.
Is it not?
No.
Okay, I don't know then.
Han Solo is the bad guy's father. Kylo Ren's father.
Oh, is she Luke's daughter?
Well, that's the thing, is you don't know.
Okay.
I think, though, that, and hear me out, from a story perspective, it makes the most sense for her to be the daughter of some evil.
Okay, yeah, like the
like
guy's...
No saying that.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's like the good guy's daughter, like the good guy's son is the bad guy, and like the bad guy's daughter is the good guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's just like you turn the trope on its head, right? And like it makes the most sense because Han and Leia being her parents don't really make a ton of sense because like the reaction wasn't right throughout the movie. And then like Luke is super obvious. Like that's the most obvious possible answer. And it's just kind of like boring. I think it would be fine, but I can't really see them going that way. So I think her parents have to be like someone high up in the dark side of things, like Emperor Palpatine or like the new evil guy, Snoke or whatever.
Okay, that'd be sweet. I didn't do that.
I think it's just interesting.
All right, that seems like a good... I have not gone and seen it yet. I probably won't pay money to see it because I had the ending ruined for me by a certain character, but...
I don't.
Did you like it, Max?
I didn't see it.
Oh, you just ruined the ending. You didn't even take the time to see the movie. And yeah, ruined it for everyone else.
Yep.
I don't really go see movies, you know.
Max was like, it was all over 4chan, dude. Come on. I was just like, come on, Max. Like...
That's funny. But what about, how do you guys feel about David Bowie today? As long as we're talking current events. Were you guys Bowie fans?
I mean, I think he was like a super... So... My only real David Bowie experience I've had, like, firsthand and not through, like, going online and listening to his music was, like, him in Labyrinth, and he scared the shit out of me.
Fucking Gun King. He was a boss.
Yeah, I was, like, a small child, and I was terrified of him.
That sounds about it.
But I thought, I think he's, like, a really interesting human, and it sucks to lose someone like that, but it was, like, kind of cool that, like, a human like that came around, like, during an era in which a human like that can be well received. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if David Bowie's born in like the 1920s, he's just like, or if he's like 20 years old in 1920, he's just not. He has no impact on society. But because he came around in a time in which like society was ready for that, he got to like rise to the top. Like,
yeah,
I think that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I'm not like going to do the thing that everyone does when someone dies and they're like, oh, I've always loved that person. They're my favorite artist. Like,
yeah.
You know how many like Johnny Cash fans there are now when fucking nobody in the world cared about Johnny Cash until he died and they made a movie about him? And then everyone was swearing up and down that they were like Johnny Cash devotees.
All right, fuck you. I loved Johnny Cash, all right?
All right, you're the only person in the world.
I remember when his wife died and I felt so bad.
All right, now I actually believe that Connor likes
him. Yeah, his wife died like 9 months before him, and then he just like got like he was like fine, like relatively fine for like an 80-year-old man that did a lot of cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
But like he was like relatively fine, and then he just like died. It was like really sad.
So then you more than anyone else could feel the pain of the fake Johnny Cash fans who like came out of the woodwork when that movie came out.
Yeah, it was just like Joaquin Phoenix isn't even good. Why do you like him? Like.
Yeah, so that bothers
me. You don't like Joaquin Phoenix? No. Have you seen Buffalo Soldiers?
I have not, but...
Wow, great movie.
He butchered Johnny, so I'm out, so...
And, like, it happened again...
I've actually seen that movie.
With, like, Lemmy, like, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Lemmy, and, like, another huge one was, like, Whitney Houston. I think I was still working in bars when Whitney Houston died, and it's, like, all everyone f***ing wanted to hear is Whitney Houston. It's like, dude, you didn't listen to a Whitney Houston song for the last 10 years, and now all of a sudden you love Whitney Houston? Like, shut up.
I mean... How does Michael Jackson fall on that spectrum?
Well, see, that's the thing. I was going to bring him up, but I think legitimately everyone in the world loved Michael Jackson. So, like, that's a safe thing to just, like...
He was God's gift to everyone, but, like, 8-year-old children. He was not God's gift to them, but...
Yeah, and he was working for someone else.
But... I was never really into it.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, like, little Michael...
But, like, you can't really, like, whatever. I'm, like, on a different planet when it comes to...
Yeah, you are, like, pretty humanless, but okay.
When it comes to, like, music, I just...
Dude, don't... like, little Michael Jackson was, like, insane. He was so talented, like... He was so
good. I just not the type of music I like, so I just just doesn't do anything for me.
He was great, and like even like all the eras of Michael were great, like he was just fantastic.
Yeah, the fact that he was like six different people was actually my favorite part about him.
Yeah, it was like kind of hard to watch like the last era, and like I wasn't.
Yeah, white Michael Jackson wasn't great.
Yeah, it was like really really unsettling, but like 15-year-old Michael Jackson was gas, like 20-year-olds, like 30-year-old, like Thriller was like gas also. Like,
uh-huh.
He was just an awesome.
What about like 90s Michael Jackson? Because that's the Michael Jackson I remember growing up.
Well, that was starting to change, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it became weird and like.
Yeah, never into it. I don't know. Yeah,
as soon as he dropped like Black or White. Like that was pretty much
that's my premier Michael Jackson. When people mention Michael Jackson, that's the song I think of.
He does. There is like a couple good songs past that point. Like Remember the Time is insane, and there's that song he put out with Jay-Z. Like when I was in college, I remember that was really good. But they were mostly misses at that point.
That's fair. Yeah.
But anyway, this is a really long-winded way of saying that, like. I wasn't a David Bowie devotee, but I think he did some incredibly cool stuff, and like he definitely felt someone who was immortal in a lot of ways. Like just like kind of bigger, like his image was bigger than himself.
Yeah, he'll like live on as like that kind of like idol in society for a while.
But I think so. And I think it's like, he was creative enough that I usually hate idolization, but like he's an interesting enough character where I think he was like
think he deserves it.
Yeah, it's like a noteworthy passing for sure.
I mean, I think if any like of the people who deserve it, I'm glad it's like David Bowie instead of like some generic sports ball dude.
Yeah,
just because it's like so much more interesting, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I hate how people like I love basketball, but I really hate how people like idolize like Michael Jordan. Do you know what I mean? It's just like he's just not that interesting. He was just really good, like
yeah, he's great at basketball.
Right, but he just like and then he was just like just an asshole to his teammates, and it was just like kind of dead. But
and,
like,
and basically everyone else on the planet as well.
Yeah, and it's just like I just don't get it. Like I like basketball. Michael Jordan was very good, but
mm-hmm.
I just don't get the idolization. Where David Bowie, it's like this is this like really deep, like multifaceted character who like wanted to say a lot of things and
make movies and stuff.
Yeah. And now, and he passed away, and it sucks because he's not going to make it. I mean, he released an album, like, less than a month ago, right?
Yeah, I saw something, like, right before we started this call, that he, like, had a video set up to release upon his death, and it, like, just got out in the last few hours.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. That's awesome. I haven't seen it yet, but I don't think it's, like, it's not, like, a goodbye message. It's, like, more art, I think.
Just like his final work, but it's not like
yeah, like be it a song or a movie or something. I haven't watched it yet, so I'll have to watch it after we wrap this up. But
cool, we'll definitely check that out. Well, thank you, Brian. We're sorry for wasting so much of your time.
No, I love talking with you guys. I was excited to come on and talk about the set.
Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Just so you guys know, if you found us, good work. Keep it up. We like it. You can find us on mtgcast.com. The Flipside Gaming website, flipsidegaming.com, underneath the Mind Crank podcast tab. You can also find us on iTunes. If you guys subscribe, it'll help you guys see when new episodes come out. And thank you guys. Hope you enjoy the conversation, and see you guys next week.